Welcome to the Gregarious Mammal Podcast. This is Chris with a little bit of a cold.
And this is Kate.
Do you have a cold?
With no cold.
No cold. Fortunately. Well, that's good. In this episode, we are going to feature interviews we did from an event we were both at called 5G Techritory, however you exactly want to say it.
Yeah.
About, what was it about? About Techritory. No, it was about 5G.
Yeah, it's about 5G technology, particularly looking at the Baltic region, and the conference was held in Riga in Latvia, and the organisers kindly invited us along as press guests, which was great. We got to do some interviews. We got to attend lots of interesting sessions about 5G. And we also, you know, got to meet a few interesting startups and different people.
First is Roberto Viola, who is the Director General of the EU Commission, dealing with communications, technology, and a whole bunch of other things. He's responsible for the EU data roaming, for net neutrality, and is now helping with the 5G rollout in Europe. And the second...
Our second interview was with Peja Bowie. I think that's how you pronounce it.
It's French. I would go maybe for Peja Bagui, but I don't know.
I can't really do a French accent, unfortunately. And he was the CEO of a startup called EasyMile that were working on autonomous buses. We did a really interesting interview and we'll be having a corresponding article in DZone.
We record most of our interviews. If it's okay with you, we may repurpose some of the audio, but if it's
not... Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I say sensible things. If I say stupid things, it would be even better on the net.
Happy birthday, exactly. By the way.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I mean, firstly, we should say thank you for EU data roaming and net neutrality. As freelance journalists on very bad German contracts.
I think people tend to forget.
I can't tell you the number of times I've had to leave conferences because the Wi-Fi is so bad, you can't make phone calls.
It helps a lot.
The Wi-Fi in this hotel is terrible. Yes. Yesterday night
this is
I was.
For us.
But actually, thanks to roaming, I had no problem.
And it started a day after my birthday last year. So.
I mean, you see the attitude because we had a representative in the conference, press conference from the telecom industry, and he started by saying the problem of everything in Europe is we have too many rules.
Yeah,
I think this is really shooting in ourself foot in both of them. You can decide which one. I mean, with free roaming, the data traffic has boomed in Europe. Boomed. So it's win-win. I don't think it's in the interest of the operator to be against net neutrality. Okay, they cannot, because it's a European rule you have to respect. But even in case it would not have been a rule, I think it's simply crazy to stop a fintech application from a competitor. It would be simply crazy. So I think, or not to protect the data in 5G. I mean, we have to say the problem of 5G is that there's GDPR in Europe.
Yeah.
Come on, this is an asset, not the problem.
That was actually going to be one of our questions, because there was a lot of conversations on the panels you're on around lots of data being exchanged, and we're still living in the shadow of GDPR, which I think was more fearful in the build-up than it actually has been.
Yes.
Because it doesn't really target that many companies. It's mainly aimed at companies that maybe were not very respectful of Europe in the first place. Interestingly, we've now already, as writers, started to see companies that have built business models
based on GDPR.
So do you think the combination of 5G, when it rolls out more widespread, plus some of those existing European regulations, will create new business models?
I'm very convinced. And one business model you can imagine, because yesterday was in a fintech conference, and it was all about the data you communicate, which financial, I mean, actors can actually use to give you service, or vice versa. I mean, and at the end of the day, the big question for all of us as data generators, do we really own our data?
Yeah.
Now, GDPR says yes, if they are personal data, but at the same time, I mean, there's someone else making a business of your data, with your consent, maybe.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So you have this strange world where few people have made zillions of euros or dollars with your data. Maybe you are more happy because you have many services, but maybe there's another world in the future where there's a personal data space that you actually control and you decide, I mean, what to do with your data. You become yourself your data broker. Now, we are working with, there's a team in my department which works at the next generation internet. One of the things we do is around this personal data space. But of course, without a very fast communication system, you don't really have a personal data space, because your personal data space is not in your pocket, it's in the cloud. So you need a very quick interaction. So 5G is a little bit the glue of this connected data world. So the two things, this new, I hope there will be this new business model, the personal data spaces. Same with identity. Identity is the next big thing on the web, because clearly you are what you are in society, because also you have an identity. You are what you are in the network, and you can actually master what you want to do if you have an identity. Today, the main identity providers in the net are the usual suspects, I mean, the platforms. I mean, but also you can use, for instance, a third-party identity, your public identity, public AID, which is given by the public administration. In this way, you pass just the information you want. Think about age verification. If you have an identity management system, you don't need to pass personal information. There will be a third-party application that will pass a flag saying yes, no, and a trusted flag. But again, you need a very fast communication system to do all this.
I think we'll have definitely questions around that for some of the people from Estonia tomorrow. But I'm unfortunately British, and we don't have ID cards like that. So it's not so...
Australia. We didn't meet them.
Okay, let's... Do you want to...
Just some sort of basic questions. I mean, we're curious in regard to the EU's role, in that we know that companies in, or countries rather, in the EU have different levels of wealth. And how will that impact the way 5G is rolled out and distributed amongst the different countries? Or regions, if you like.
Well, I mean, the economics of Europe or whatever large, area you consider, you don't change quickly. I mean, the aim of Europe, of course, is everyone raises its level of wealth, but it's a fact, indeed, that there are different levels. And when you look at Europe, I mean, we have areas where we have the most advanced network of the world, and we have areas which are really lagging behind. I mean, so the picture is not even at all. So our obsession, of course, is first of all to make sure that the rules are more or less the same everywhere. That's why we worked a lot on this European Communication Code, which are all the ground rules of 5G have to be the same. I mean, the second point is we have funds to help the regions which are less developed, which are the regional funds. So, and we want to spend this money in digital. We're already doing, but I think we should do more. And then the other idea is connecting cross-border, and that's the idea of this corridor that we'll sign tomorrow, this Via Baltica corridor. And there are other corridors around Europe which have more or less the same pattern. The other point is about skills. I mean, making sure that people can actually benefit from this revolution. It's not, again, a few billionaire that will be even more billionaire, but everyone will be a bit more rich, if I may say so, in many sense.
In different ways. Exactly. I think we're definitely into a territory where the definitions of rich will start changing.
Yes, I agree.
But that probably not in our generation. But
Well, I think you are touching, yes, I mean, it would be nice to live 1,000 years to see all these changes.
Well, no, but,
maybe some would not agree. But at the same time, you are a little bit touching this demystification of ownership, I mean, in many sense. And once again, 5G, blockchain, all this will change completely the shape, the notion of ownership, I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to ask another question around kind of how this works in Europe. I mean, especially for some of our American listeners and readers, there's sometimes a little bit of a misunderstanding of what Europe is and what it means exactly. But, you know, it's a myriad of 27 countries with various issues and problems, and sometimes things like telecommunications backbones may not be one of their real issues at the time. So how do you kind of balance that aspect of you hope this will help in these ways, but they have these other issues that they also want to resolve?
Yeah. And so let me give a guide for the American listeners or readers to Europe or the Australian one. Yeah, indeed, Europe, I mean, it's a complex place. I mean, you might see it as a whole or you might see it as individual countries. And it's the place of excess. I mean, it's a place of very beautiful things also in terms of what you can visit and also in terms of digital. Because, I mean, probably we have the most advanced rules of the world in data protection. We guarantee roaming no matter what is the operator. I mean, in US, to have roaming around the US, you have to have the same operator. Here, whatever operator is fine. So you have much more coverage, by the way. You come here in Latvia with your SIM card, whatever operator has to provide you coverage. Mm. So the roaming services are better. In some parts of Europe, connectivity is much better. But the most important thing, when you compare how much a citizen here in Riga or in Paris pays for his full broadband service and TV and the rest, is probably half of what a citizen in New York pays.
Sure.
And more. So we have been pursuing a different model, which is the model of competition, entry into the market and the rest. Now, this model is very loved by politicians and citizens, because it produces really attractive prices. If you consider that now the fourth operator in Iliad in Italy, just enter Italy, it offers all you can eat for 15 euros. I'm not sure in San Francisco you will find this package.
we live in Germany where you also don't find those packages.
Yeah, in Germany too.
Yes.
So Germany
what
is...
What can I say? And I'm curious, I mean, not to be over political, but I know it's something in our lives and a lot of expats' lives. UK, I mean, are there discussions with the UK? Like, are they just going to sit there and do their own thing and as an autonomous entity? Is everyone else sort of catches up and works together?
Well, I mean, frankly, we do hope that what the UK citizens have decided to exit the EU comes in an orderly way, which means we have a deal. Now, but at the same time, people should be warned of what are the consequences on everyday life on no deal. So from the UK side, from our side, we have put up notices saying, for instance, roaming will end or might end.
Yeah.
Portability of content, I mean, might end. So I'm afraid that's the crude reality. But still, I mean, the hope is that we can work towards an orderly deal.
A lot of the telcos are international companies.
Well, that's what
anyway,
I thought,
so, yeah.
Which is part of the... Curious about these rolling up out the infrastructure. I mean, are we looking at something that's added on to existing infrastructure, or will it be something completely new from scratch?
That's the worry number one. And if you want the flip side of the European model that's given so much to the users, is of course operators, you hear them complain that their return of investment is less than their American counterparts. So for us, one of the purpose of making, drafting the new rules, and then, I mean, through the political process of approval, the new rules of telecom is to attract more investments. Now, one part of the trick would be to have the whole value chain, I mean, attracted into co-invest in infrastructure. So it should be also an interest for car companies, for medical device manufacturers to be part of this. So I said in my speech, we calculated that to bring Europe into the gigabit society, which means every one of us having a gigabit connection, it would cost 500 billion euros, which is an amount with so many zeros. And most of it is private investment. So we ought to find the good partnership with the private sector and convince, I mean, the investor that Europe is a good place to invest.
But will, so the existing towers and things like that, are they going to be reused? I mean, or is that not something that's up to them, not something you need to say?
Well, I mean, the existing tower will be reused, but I mean, this technology needs many, many tiny transmitters. I'm really fascinated by the city of San Francisco, as I said.
It integrates
the antennas in the lamppost.
Power them with solar or something.
There are very, very nice ideas. Did I hear something also very nice they want to do in Sydney? I'm not sure, but I heard something. So everyone, every municipality in the world is a bit creative about this.
There's a lot of plans, pilots, and test beds and things like that.
So
how long do you think we'll get into the actual commercial? It's in the street when I walk down the street or
Well, I mean, I'm sure a big driver, although we speak about, I mean, very important things, will be the next mobile phone.
Yeah,
so
we saw some at
Indeed. So we do expect the 2019 generation of mobile phone top of the range to have a 5G in.
It was strange. LG, I can't remember the company now, I had some at IFA, and they were just sat there in a box with nothing.
There will be a lot of marketing hype. It's like artificial intelligence. Now everything is with artificial intelligence. Even the most stupid.
Least in the press release. Don't have that much, but they'll just write.
That's the so-called phenomena of everything to the press. So fiber to the press, 5G to the press, AI to the press. I mean, if you have a stupid software that tells you, I mean, what is going to be the weather tomorrow, I mean, this is not AI powered. It's a prediction algorithm, stupid or less stupid. It's around since a long time. The same with 5G. There's an advancement in the 4G technology, which are extremely interesting in terms of speed. You want to call them 5G minus? Okay. So I think we are also pushing for the real 5G, which is a kind of game changer. That's why we have this observatory, which we launched today. So people can read and understand a bit more what is 5G, what is going on in the world, what to expect, because there's an horrendous confusion around.
If you look at something like autonomous vehicles, the companies I'm speaking to are saying somewhere between 2021, 2023, but somewhere between level 3 and 5 information. On the road, do you think, firstly, the technology will catch up? And if we look at Europe, at least in your area, do you think the infrastructure and maybe the laws and stuff will catch up as well? We're promising big things with some of this technology.
I think we need to go faster. And in regulated technology, you have always this terrible dilemma. Do I go fast or allow technology to deploy? Now, in the case of car being, around, it's better that you prevent that everyone invents its own rule, because otherwise you will have a software that works in Germany and then it stops at the border when it crosses the border with Austria, which is not exactly the game. So we are trying to convince member states, first convincing, to work together on these corridors. Then next wave will be in a few months, we'll publish a recommendation on cooperative sandboxes, so how to exchange data and how to deal with cybersecurity aspect of this. And of course, I do not exclude that in the future there might be the need for some legislative measures in Europe to make sure that things will go. I think it will go fast. I'm not sure 21, 23, but it will go very fast, especially in environments which are not that complicated like highways. In town it's more complicated, but in highway it's more or less already there. And it's really, really important that this is rolled out very fast. It's about the life of all of us.
Well, that's a good point, because if you look at a highway or a freeway or what have you, the autobahn, as a conduit for, you know, being the test bed and the ideal spot for practicing, then you've got that segue between then and getting into those cities where you've got these tiny little roads.
That's actually where we've got, I think we've got time for one more question, which actually you already mentioned one, but are there the Baltic corridor. Are there any other successful or currently rolled out test cases in Europe?
Yes, we have. We are sponsoring right now that won the competition three. One is called the Via Baltica. We are not yet sponsoring, but we understood.
the Via Baltica.
I don't know. I mean, I did not invent the name. So I was curious. I mean, to see this lady. We have another one, which is another project, which is Carmen. You might say then it's French. Yeah. No, it's German, Austrian, and Italian. It's the Brenner, the infamous Brenner corridor, which is 60 million of vehicles per year. It's one of the most heavy charged corridor of the world. And it will run from Munich down to Bologna and cross Austria. Mm. And this is a big consortia. We have all the German, Austrian, Italian Telecom participants, car manufacturer, BMW, and Chrysler. So it's quite a big thing. Then we have another one, which, what are these funny names? So he knows all the names.
Kroko, Metz-Merzig, Luxembourg. This triangle there. And then one other one who has several corridors, in one in Spain, Eastern Europe.
Okay. So it's catching up.
So I'm Pej Van Begui, and I'm the CTO of a company called EasyMile. Our flagship product is a autonomous shuttle that helps transport people in city centers, private areas, and we're expanding into the open road as well.
I mean, it's kind of appropriate that you're here, because a lot of people have been talking about smart cities and smart mobility. But you've actually got a product that, as far as I know, is already in use. I think I've seen it.
It is. It is already in use.
Yeah.
So our shuttle is what we call level 4 autonomy, means that it's fully autonomous. Yeah. It doesn't have a steering wheel, doesn't have, you know, wing mirrors and pedals and all that. But level 4 means that it's fully autonomous under limited circumstances and conditions. And so currently those conditions are much narrower than what we would hope. And so we're working, you know, obviously very hard for the past 4 years to improve that. My belief is that there's a lot of technology, basically advances that are coming that would help a lot, autonomous mobility.
You know, one thing that always intrigues me is when I come to places like this and like Tallinn and even Lviv, sometimes, and even Berlin, where we're from, like the roads in the city centres and the more urban areas don't seem terribly conducive to autonomous vehicles, because there's lots of cobblestones and there's small walkways and stuff. How does it work?
Well, actually, our vehicle is very well adapted to these conditions.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So basically, it's got no concept of front and back, so it's fully symmetrical, and all four wheels are steering wheels, right? So it means that if you have very narrow, basically, streets and turns, you can still take them. And because there is no concept of front and back, you can do like a lift, basically. So go all the way through a very narrow city center road and come back without needing to do this U-turn.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, very convenient. And it's much narrower than a typical bus, because it's a small shuttle. Mm-hmm. And so, again, we have kind of developed it thinking that it would be very appropriate for that types of environment.
Who do you see as your use cases, like your users?
So currently our customers, So we've sold we've sold 80 of them or something like that. So since 2015, where we first introduced them, and we've produced a number, a couple of generations of vehicles. So our main customers are the largest transport operators in the world. So typically in France, you know, RATP, Transdev, and Transdev is a global company. So they've bought our shuttles, and they have a few even in the United States. In Germany, we have Deutsche Bahn as one of our biggest customers. Same in Australia, China, Scandinavia. So what these companies do is that they see that there is this new type of mobility coming. So first they want to understand it, and you know, they're very risk averse people, and for a good reason. So they take their time to evaluate the product, and they also want to understand how they could leverage it. So we don't position it currently as a competitor to existing transports. We position it as a complementary mobility
solution. Would you call
solution.
It a last mile solution?
That's what we do. Yeah, we call it a first and last mile solution.
Chris has had it written down. I'm like,
it's on the website. Right?
How many people fit in the vehicle?
So currently 12, and in a comfortable way, so not packed, but so 12 people, and that's our current shuttle. And we're also working with other manufacturers of existing vehicles to produce level 4 versions of their vehicles.
This might seem like a dumb question, but
there are no dumb questions.
We also have inbuilt accessibility ramp.
Yes,
I'm guessing that is also automated.
It's fully automated. Yeah. So basically, you have two buttons on the outside. Mm-hmm. One is to open the doors, and the other one is to basically get that ramp out. And it's actually quite nice to see, because the vehicle basically comes down a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And
like then some you of the have London the ramp. Buses do that, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
And what's its range and speed as well, roughly?
The speed is currently about 25 kilometers per hour, so it's slow, but from our feedback, from the feedback we receive from our customers, the speed is not a problem of today. So 25-30 kilometers is more than enough.
Sure.
And it's got 14 hours of autonomy.
Okay.
If you don't turn on the air conditioning.
And then you charge it, right?
And then we recharge it. Exactly. So.
And with it, I was just thinking, like, your current customers, are they using it on their own properties, like, say, a university land or, a big factory space?
Yeah. Exactly. There are basically two main scenarios today: is private areas, so private campuses, university campuses, business campuses, new kinds of smart cities. For example, in the US, there is this place called Babcock Ranch, where they have a fully new city built on the premise that they're going to produce their own electricity with solar, and they're not going to have cars within the city, and so they have these shuttles to move around and come to the outskirts of the city where they can take their normal car.
Yeah.
And the other use case, obviously, the open road within cities. That's currently more challenging for all the actors in the field. But that's obviously where everybody wants and needs to go in the future.
Because also you have the tracked easy for airport baggage. Yes, I mean, I can imagine both of them being very, very applicable in airports.
Yeah. So that's one of our main use cases. And we've TLD is the producer of this tractor, and they're the largest ground support equipment and machinery types of vehicles producers in the world. And so we see this as a very good product for airports and also for industrial sites. Mm-hmm. So we've announced a couple of weeks ago, maybe, or even sooner, that PSA, so one of the largest car manufacturers in France, is actually testing it in one of their factories. These small tractors, they can carry like 30 tons of material.
30 tons?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing.
So electric.
Excuse me if you have competitors that make something very, very similar, but I think we saw them at Mobile Congress?
For tractors or for the shuttles?
The shuttles.
Yes. There is another French company called Navia.
Oh, dear. Okay, all right.
We've got something very similar.
I'm pretty sure I saw yours in... Where was it in Scandinavia when Finland? What's the capital called again?
Helsinki.
Sorry.
So yeah, we've been to Helsinki. Sure, yeah. Okay. So our vehicles have been a lot in Sweden, Norway, and Finland, Germany. As I mentioned, is a very big country for us. France.
Interesting. It's funny because I hear that a lot, and actually living there, it's sometimes
we live in Berlin, which is not Germany.
It's a little bit.
I was in Berlin like yesterday.
Yeah, I saw you were opening an office. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, we have an office in the university where they have a lot of new startups around mobility.
Yeah, a lot of the aviation ones are there as well.
Drones.
It's a specific one on the outskirts a bit.
Oh, interesting.
It was part of a startup. It was part of a startup last year.
Right.
And they had a lot of there's a couple of other companies we know.
I think I know the one.
We've got three people there, so it's still a very small kind of operations. But
yeah.
I mean, and when I think about this conference, I mean, 5G is the buzzword, of course, and everyone's talking about the potential, the future, you know, where do you see or how do we get from here to there? Because it seems to be the sticking point with some of this stuff.
So there meaning like what, fully autonomous vehicles?
Maybe a first question is, what's the most important thing to your company and on your vehicles? Is it getting the legislation for automation? Is it the getting perhaps the infrastructure around the physical infrastructure? So or is it the 5G? Like, where does
that's
it sit?
That's a very good question. It's actually the topic of the presentation that I just gave. that's all right. I mean, for your readers and all that, it's going to be interesting. Basically, my view is that the current vehicle that we have is limited, and it's not limited by what we can do. It is basically limited by what the sensors can sense. Mm. So typically, LiDARs are low resolution. They don't have a very deep field of view, etc. Radars are very low resolution. So the sensors are very limiting as of today. The compute power that we require is quite high, and if you want to have something that's automotive grade, basically having the processing power of a smartphone is just not possible. So imagine more power. And finally, yes, connectivity is very important, and I think that there's a lot of very smart people working on sensors, and I've seen many very promising things displayed and almost like ready for testing. So it's going to take another couple of years probably to be available, you know, industrialized and available. But this is going to get solved at some point. Onboard compute is going to take more time because it's more complicated, but it might get there. One of the very good benefits that I see with 5G is that we might be able to offload some of the processing from the vehicle onto the edge.
That was going to be next question.
If we can do that, because there is a very high bandwidth more importantly, there is very low latency, apparently you're going to get about 1 millisecond of latency, you can easily imagine that you can maybe not do the most safety critical things in the cloud because you still have to go to the data center, but maybe on the edge you will be able to do interesting things with this high bandwidth, low latency.
And in the areas where it's currently being tested, are you using 5G at all?
We've tested 5G, so with companies like Huawei, Nokia, Ericsson, we've done some tests. But the problem is, you need to also change your software and the way you do things if you want to leverage that capacity, right? And so currently, it would be just too much an effort for us to make all those changes.
Let's do two phases to the question. Firstly, what do you see as the greatest barrier to autonomous vehicles at the moment? Is it technology, or is it regulation, or both?
So currently there is no regulation.
Or lack of, yes.
So it means that you cannot go on the road. I think it's cultural, actually.
Yeah.
I
right?
can say
so.
Yeah.
First of all, people tend to think that the problem is kind of solved. So that's thanks to marketing campaigns for people like Elon Musk and the likes.
It's actually a very good point. I think you're right there.
And the problem is seriously, seriously far from being solved. So if you listen to Waymo, for example, they're not very open and they're very secretive. But one of the public presentations that they've made is that they say, yeah, it took us 10 years to get where we are and we need another 10 years to get where we want to be. So it's not a solved problem. So that's the first one. And the second one is that people expect these vehicles to be at least like one order of magnitude safer than human-driven vehicles. And just like a couple of days ago in Berlin, somebody was saying that, yeah, in order for the legislature to agree to have autonomous vehicles, they would need to be two orders of magnitude safer, which is like, if you do the math currently in Europe and in the United States, the statistics are one fatality per 100 million miles driven. So that's a very, very large number, right? Yeah. So expecting autonomous vehicles to be able to do 10 or 100 times as good on their very first iteration is just a very, very tough challenge. Imagine, you know, like we ask the same level of safety from the first airplanes. It's just not possible, right? No. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is that people expect them to be much, much safer than human driven vehicles, and it's going to be tough to achieve that.
And just a follow-up question to that, if we mostly say that the limitations and the barriers at the moment are more cultural, has that influenced the countries you've rolled out to so far, do you think?
Probably. Or most probably, because typically, you know, lots of Asian countries, they like to be bleeding edge, or, you know, Dubai, etc. They like to, they're like early adopters in the bell curve that we usually see in technology. And they don't really mind that the technology is not perfect.
Yeah.
They're just happy to have this new thing. Yeah. And so that's why, like, in Asia and the Middle East, we've been, you know, quite successful. In Scandinavia, I think they have a more green types of attitude, and that helps again, because they like to share the concept of shared mobility, electric mobility and all that. So that's probably also why we've had a lot of success there. And if you look at, you know, maybe southern European countries, we've never been to Italy or Spain, although it's coming.
I mean, I know like in Europe there's already a good ecosystem in a lot of countries of the smart city development, Barcelona and Amsterdam and so on. But are there countries that are resistant, that you've had contact dealings with, that are just like, no?
Not really. That's the good thing, is that most of them are open to testing.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, you know, testing is just a test, and we don't really know how far it's going to go. But yeah, most countries are open to testing.
I mean, I wrote an article maybe a month or so ago where Waymo and a couple of others, I think it was BMW or Daimler, were saying somewhere, and a futurist, because they always jump in somewhere, don't they, in this conversation, 2023, somewhere about that time, we'll have them on the road commercially.
Yeah, I've also read an article that said that for the past 7 years, every year they postponed by another year or two. So I think the more we do it, the more we understand the challenges.
Yeah.
And again, the more public kind of demonstrations we do, the more people think that it's not only resolved, and so it's just easy to ask for a very high level of safety. That's the challenge, really, is that everybody thought that, even I think Google, they announced that they would have them ready by 2017.
Yeah, that's true.
I think Elon Musk, every 3 months, he's saying he's going to be ready in 3 months. So we don't comment on that, because
And I mean, given that it's, you know, you've probably had a few different prototypes and iterations, what have been the biggest changes as you've developed the vehicles?
So, for example, between our generation 1 and the generation 2, although the look is very similar between these two, I think 95% of the sensors, cables, and even physical hardware things have been changed. Yeah. So yeah,
interesting. That's a big job.
That was a massive thing, and we've changed everything from sensors to computing to the inner network of the vehicle, the GPS sensors, the 4G modem. Everything was basically changed.
Mm. And moving forward, are you ever going to look into, or do you consider ever looking into scaling them up to a bigger size, or is that kind of counter to the idea anyway? Or
I mean, for this vehicle is kind of countering the idea, but as I mentioned, we're working with other manufacturers, and we believe that we don't really have any value to bring to car manufacturing. So typically, I mean, if Tesla, after 10, 15 years and many billions of dollars invested, they still are struggling to manufacture vehicles, we are not going to solve the problem. So what we do is that we partner with existing manufacturers. So TLD that we mentioned, Alstom, which is a tram and train manufacturer. So we're working on autonomous functions for the tramways. And we've also announced a partnership with Iveco, so a Italian bus and truck company. So we've announced a 12-meter bus, so a normal-sized bus. So we're working with them, and there are other companies where we're not allowed to mention.
If I may, because it's actually interesting, if I look at your open vacancies, it sort of leads a little bit into what you say, because you have one robotics engineer and everyone else is software.
The company is basically, we consider ourselves to be like most of a software company than anything else. And just the, my R&D team is about half of the size of the company. And all the other roles that we have, I'm just responsible for the software everything that's around the software. So obviously the compute and the sensors are just so tightly coupled to the software that my team is responsible for that. But we basically are recruiting across the board on all the possible positions. It's really tough to find, good people, and it's a very competitive market. Because we actually sell the product, right?
Yeah.
And when you sell it, you need to be able to provide user manuals, and our users, they're not going to drive it. They're going to set it up. And we also have a fleet manager, so that's a kind of an invisible part, but your vehicle cannot just do anything on its own, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a fleet manager that monitors the vehicle, that captures different metrics. If the vehicle for some reason has a fault, you don't have a driver to turn to.
Right.
So you need to have something like in a lift where you have a button to call for an emergency, where
how
we have
much
that on the vehicle.
With that is how much predictive maintenance is built in? Like, I know you mentioned using the edge computing, for example. Mm-hmm. So are you able to anticipate those problems before they occur?
So we have people working on that, but we just don't have enough data and enough historical data.
And then you need to kind of, I don't know what the right term is, it's almost like the computer teaches itself from the data.
You need to do a lot of data mining. Yeah. So there's a statistical approach, and there's also a more probabilistic approach where we hired somebody with a background in that. And that was a very funny hire. I could explain the details. The problem is that everything is just so new in this industry that even when you talk to the sensor manufacturers, you tell them, okay, what's your MTBF, the mean time between failures, of your hardware? They just cannot tell us because they don't have enough data, even the manufacturers.
Well, they don't want to give it to you probably as well.
I interviewed a company a while back. I can't quite remember who it was, but they were talking about the problems of their autonomous sort of vehicles in different types of weather. Like snow and rain, because the sensor, particularly the headlights and stuff, shouldn't get wet or what have you.
I think it was mist.
It actually created a new industry, because there's now like a bunch of startups that have this job where they have a special cloth and a special spray, and this person who goes and cleans the headlights.
Yeah, so for us, it's not the headlights, it's the LiDARs.
Yeah, right.
And the LiDARs, they're very sensitive. So they're covered by a very specific type of coating.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you scratch that coating, or if you use some product you're not not supposed to, then basically the LiDAR is damaged. Mm-hmm. And again, they're very sensitive, they're very expensive.
Especially in the industrial
and setting. They can't see through the fog. They
must have been fog.
I mean, for the rain they would see, you know, drops, and that's a problem because you need to be able to filter that, but through the fog they just see like a wall.
Well,
I think fog is one of the most challenging environments now
for autonomous vehicles. I mean, this is slightly tangent to what you do, but are there any developments in that to fix that?
Well, I think there's that the technology itself basically is not allowing for the light to go through the fog. I mean, that's the concept of fog, right? So you have microscopic drops of water that's kind of dispersing the ray of light. But there are other sensors. So typically cameras, they're better. They're not very good even if you have very thick fog. But then like radars, they see completely through the fog. There's no problem. The only problem with radars is that they're currently very, very, very inaccurate. So you can't navigate with the precision that you need.
Relatively old technology.
Yes. Yeah. But again, this is a field where you have a number of companies and startups digging into high definition radars. And I personally put a lot of faith into the radars for the future.
And just in general, I mean, I know that this is a technology that's evolving so fast, you know, incrementally, year by year. Are the prices dropping at all yet?
Not yet. but again, it's because nothing is industrialized.
Yeah.
And even if you...
Or scaled, I guess.
Companies who produce a new LiDAR. LiDARs are currently mechanical LiDARs. And I'm not an expert in the manufacturing of those, but apparently you need to spend a lot of expert man hours to calibrate those and to balance them. And so that's what making them quite expensive and hard to manufacture. And as you mentioned, the problem is there is no scale for these producers, so they cannot produce a lot of them. And at the same time, even if they could, there is no demand for a lot of them.
Not yet.
Because OEMs and car manufacturers, basically, they don't have a demand for that yet. And at the same time, all the people, all the companies who produce autonomous vehicles, they have a very small scale if you compare that to the OEM. So I think it's going to take time too.
And those were the interviews we did from the 5G Technotory conference in Riga, Latvia.
Indeed. And what were your general thoughts of the event, just very quickly, Kate?
Yeah, it was a really interesting event. I went knowing, you know, not a crazy amount about 5G in terms of the actual implementation. I knew about the possibilities and kind of the use cases and stuff, but went really wanting to know about how we get from now to there, given the timelines are, you know, different depending on which country you talk to, but somewhere in the early 2020s for most rollouts, I believe. And it seemed to be a lot of conversations about the need to have conversations.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussions around policies, use cases, what needs to be done, etc., without too much discussion on how that's being done, when that's being done. And there was a lot of sort of positive talk around not wanting to just make it about business and et cetera, et cetera. And I wonder how much that will turn out in real life.
And there was also the launch of the Baltic Corridor, which was a Baltic effort to kind of unite the 5G efforts. And we also found out about a EU effort involved in 5G, where it was basically a news and resource site, which had a kind of funny logo that I think some of you might enjoy that harks a little bit back to MS Paint.
The 5G Observatory. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was the show. I'm not entirely sure what our next episode will be. We will probably have a link show next. If you've enjoyed listening, you can find previous episodes at gregariousmamble.com/podcast or support the show with merchandise and donations at gregariousmamble.com/support. How can people find you, Kate?
Sure. Probably the easiest way is Twitter, Kate_Lawrence, and that's Kate with a C and Lawrence with a W.
And I am at Chris Chinch on Twitter and ChrisChinchilla.com on the worldwide webs.
And I'd just add, we do have a Facebook page where we post regular news and commentary, some that we don't have time to discuss that just, you know, captures our fancy.
And until the next time, if you have been, thank you for listening.